This week on Out of the Air, our whole show features a sustainable and holistic hair and wardrobe expert with over 30 years of practical research experience, Linda Holatz, who is a PhD candidate in the psychology about connections between hair care and hair pulling disorder. Our spotlights in LaPorte County Symphony's New World Concert on March 8th at Holdcraft Performing Arts Center in Michigan City.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And once again, we'd like to welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight from the LaPorte County Symphony Orchestra, the Executive Director, Emily Yannis, and she's going to talk about, well, things they have just done with this series and what they have coming up in their next concert. Emily, welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thanks for having me. Great to see you as always.
I know. It's always so nice. Thank you.
Well, you have just completed the jazz concert last month, and that was kind of a departure and everything like that. And the whole season, I know, is like American theme. So tell us a little bit about that, the attendance, and was there any wild dress-up people there?
Yes, our costume contest was fantastically received. Absolutely awesome to see everybody dressed in their 1920s finest. People really enjoyed this celebration of the American jazz age. So it was a lot of fun with our guest soloist, Rebecca Howell, singing a lot of familiar tunes. So just a really wonderfully received concert.
Were there chaplain playing during the chaplain suite?
Not during, they don't have a screen behind like they do at the Civic, but on the TVs in the lobbies as people came in.
Oh, excellent.
So we had a photo booth.
Okay.
People could get their picture taken in their 1920s paraphernalia, post it to Facebook, and have a good time. We also had our jazz trio playing in the lobby in the pre-concert hour. And the LaPorte Historical Society was there as well, sharing some special info about the 1920s in LaPorte County. So it was a really festive pre-concert hour.
So next, what you have coming up is kind of a more symphonic type thing. So tell us a little bit about your next concert, which is truly an Americana concert.
That's right. So Sunday, March 8th, we will be playing the third subscription concert in our season. And this one is called The New World. And the centerpiece is Dvorak's New World Symphony, or Symphony Number 9. Now, Dvorak is a Czech composer, so not American, but spent some time in the Americas and wrote this symphony based on what he observed and what he saw and what he took in of the New World when he came to America. So he was very influenced by African-American spirituals and Native American elements. And so it's a really interesting take on America from an outsider's perspective. So, and it's a familiar favorite of classical music lovers. And so I think people will really enjoy it.
Two pieces inspired by Lincoln, too. And
that's
I'm familiar with Copland's, but not with Sela Sung's.
Yeah, so she's a modern composer. This is a piece written just, I believe, in the last 20 years. And This is called Lincoln's Battle. So it's going to be different from Copland's Lincoln Portrait, but two different composers' views on Lincoln. I think will be really interesting to contrast each other and to complement what else we're playing on the program. And we'll be having Larry Brechner himself as our narrator for Lincoln Portrait. So we're really excited about that.
Well, yeah, I am too. I started reviewing the actual text a little bit, and then I looked up all the people that do it. What a group to be in! Like James Earl Jones. I had heard one was Gregory Peck. There's some pretty formidable people who have done that. So
that's right. Yeah, it's going to be a very moving experience, I think, for our audiences.
And are you going to have a hat on, Larry? A Lincoln hat?
No, but I think I will have my tux on. So. But okay, you're going to do this concert where?
At the Holdcraft Performing Arts Center in Michigan City, which is right next to the old Elston School, next to the Y, in Michigan City, near the Franklin Arts District there. So
yeah, beautiful, comfortable spot.
Yes, it's a lovely acoustic, nice seats. And you know, it's right near all those great restaurants on Franklin Street. This one is a matinee. It's a Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. So you can plan to have dinner afterward or lunch before and make it a nice day out.
You know, we sometimes talk about the special things you have. I can't remember what your group is, like Friends of the Symphony and Luncheons. Do you have any of those coming up?
We do, yes. March the 10th, I believe, is the next one. And that is a Tuesday. And that will be held at Patrick's Grill in Michigan City. And our special guest is our principal percussionist, Brad Stotz, who's going to play a little bit for us and talk about his time playing with the symphony. I believe he's been in the symphony 40 years.
Wow.
So he's seen it all as far as the Laporte gets.
So exciting.
Yeah, so anyone is welcome to join us noon at Patrick's Grill on March the 10th in Michigan City.
Great. I always tease percussionists that they just, when I was playing in band and things like that, they just make it up back there. You know, they're notes. We don't need no stinking notes. Not true, I know, in the real world.
That's but it's not true. They have to count like crazy.
I just thought about that. It's like the poor triangle player has to count, you know, like 300 measures for a couple ding-dings and they have to move to nothing else.
They have to count rests.
We have just about a minute left. Maybe give us a quick preview of what you have coming up next.
Sure, yeah. April 18th, we have Elton John, Remember When Rock Was Young, the Elton John Experience at the LaPorte Civic Auditorium. We have a very special Broadway actor star, Craig Meyer, who plays Elton John in this fully costumed, fully produced show. It's going to be fantastic with the LCSO playing the charts with these Elton John songs. So it's going to be really fun to hear these pieces with a full orchestra, strings, brass, everything. So
some dancing in the aisles, maybe.
Oh, absolutely. I think we'll have a lot of people dressing up for that one too. And it'll be a great
time. I think I already am.
Yeah, you've got your glasses going.
I got my Elton glasses on.
Well, that's Emily Yannis from the LaPorte County Symphony, Executive Director. And we're talking about March 8th at the Holdcraft Performing Arts Center, America's 25th and Americana Concert. Thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Emily.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Sunday is brought to you by Emberforge Consulting. With end-to-end expertise in learning strategy, design, and implementation, Emberforge turns your organization's knowledge into impact. To learn more, visit emberforgeconsulting.com. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. Did you know that you can also listen to Art on the Air anytime as a podcast at Lakeshore Public Media's website, through Lakeshore's app, or from NPR? Plus, it's available on demand from your favorite podcast website, including TuneIn, Spotify, Amazon Music, Pandora, Apple Music, iHeartRadio, and many more. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode.
This is Emily Yanez, Executive Director for the LaPorte County Symphony Orchestra, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are pleased to welcome Linda Holatz to Art on the Air. Linda works as a sustainable and holistic hair and wardrobe expert with over 30 years of practical research experience. Holding a master's degree in clinical psychology and one in European languages and literature, she has published multiple books on the themes of hair, wardrobe, and gems, and has educated people in person and online worldwide. At 13 years old, she experienced a variation of hair pulling disorder plus subsequent hair loss. Unknowingly, this led to her life's work and has taken her all over the world. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Linda. It is so delightful seeing you.
Thank you, Esther, for this beautiful introduction. And yeah, a big aloha and thank you for having me here.
Well, Linda, what we like to do in our show is we want our audience to know the entire background of our guest. I call it their origin story. And so what we want to hear is, you know, where you grew up, where you're born, and the whole thing. How you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Linda's journey.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I was born in Hamburg, Germany. And I always say when people ask me where I'm from and who I am, that I'm a vegan hamburger. And that throws them off. But, you know, I have became a vegetarian as a teenager and then later a vegan. So yeah, I'm a hamburger. And so I was raised here, went to the university. And as Esther already mentioned, I think the worst thing actually was that I had hair loss as a teenager. And when you have hair loss as a teenager, you really panic and you think that's the end, you know, of your love life, of your future. And at that time, that was in the, you know, in the 80s, there was not, I mean, there was obviously not the amount of knowledge available that we had right now. And then plus hair loss is something that is not always given a lot of attention because it's not life-threatening. It can be the warning sign of the body that something else is going on, but dermatologists, you know, usually just hope that it'll go away. So that also set, you know, the tone for me and my research and trying to learn everything that I could about hair. And then the third thing was that I never felt really great at a conventional hair salon, you know, where you just get like a cape around you and your hair gets washed and it gets cut and it's sometimes too short. And I just felt uncomfortable. So there were long periods where I never went. And yeah, so that's basically how I got sensitized to the theme of hair. And then I went after my studies. I was 25 years old. I followed my intuition, my dreams, and I went to California. And I stayed there for 27 years in California and Hawaii. That's where Esther and I know each other from, because I really wanted to expand my horizons and not just travel, but to really live somewhere. And yeah, it's been beautiful. A very rich journey.
So can you talk about your childhood in Germany then? What was school like? Was it an arts-focused school? I mean, what was your day-to-day like in the household?
Yeah, it was not an art-focused school. I grew up in a very kind of more upscale neighborhood, although I come from a real, you know, my dad is a carpenter, my mom is the tailor, and we're, you know, I'm second-generation refugees from the war. So we lived in a really good neighborhood, but the schools I went to were very liberal at that time. And so we did have art, and we had... Yeah, we had a lot of kind of conservative teachers, but also younger ones. And the biggest blessing actually was that during my 13 years in Germany back then, you went 13 years basically to get an equivalent of a high school diploma. And in those 13 years, we did 10 class trips. That's a lot. And I mean, we went to Denmark, we went to England. You know, a surfing trip. And it just also just really expanded me. And we all loved it. And the friends from back then, we were also a very beautiful group. And I'm still friends. And we have our reunions. Out of the 80 people, we're still like 50 people coming together right now. Well, 40 really, years later. I know. We're kind of tight. Yeah.
Yeah. And it also shows how you then became comfortable with moving to California and Hawaii, you know, yeah. with all this travel, you know, you'd already.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, become
yeah,
accustomed
growing
to
up. I feel I grew up, I was, yeah, my family and my friends and my surroundings were very supportive of me being me.
So what did you gravitate toward? Was there music in the household? Was it an artistic household at all?
My father was very musical and played the guitar. When I started yoga at age 15, 16, I started chanting. Before then, I mean, I just did some mandatory musical instruments, but it was more that, I mean, to say this dramatically, you know, in this lifetime, I chose not to get into learning an instrument and practicing and dedicating a lot of time, but instead to put my energy into languages, into written art, into writing and poetry, and then ultimately, of course, you know, art and hair. So that was a conscious choice because I saw how much it took to really learn and master an instrument.
You know, I'm going to ask you more of a cultural question. Coming from Germany into, and I think this is what you were in the California and such in the 90s, was that a kind of a culture shock for you? You know, how different, or your perception of America and Americans, of course, California and Hawaii is kind of different. But talk us about the kind of the cultural.
Yes, yeah, I'd love to. Well, it wasn't, it was exactly what I had expected and dreamt because I grew up knowing that one of the most famous speeches of all times, which was held 2 years before I was born, was by John F. Kennedy in Berlin, where he said that famous quote, "Ich bin ein Berliner." And because the United States and the Americans were just instrumental in helping to build Germany and were perceived as very generous, that was one thing. So that was, I mean, I knew about that speech, I don't know, when I was very little. Although, and then, of course, if you think about the connections between Hawaii, I mean, for example, Elvis Presley had to do his military service and went to Germany.
Right.
And he also had been to Hawaii. I mean, it was just incredible. And just recently, there's a town called Bremerhaven, kind of at the North Sea, where he arrived, and I saw photos of all the people greeting him. And then I remember my parents in the 70s, they listened to music from Tahiti and Fiji, you know, while they were doing their card games and probably smoking and drinking a little champagne or something. It was just very much that. And then later at the University of Hawaii, I had the chance of studying with a professor who specialized in all the historical connections, especially between the islands and Europe and all the people who immigrated. And so it just felt like I was just following thousands of people's footsteps, except I had the luxury of flying and not right. having to be in a boat for many weeks.
Right. Yeah, I often wonder, you know, and one thing I always wonder about, and this is a language thing, just out of curiosity, and we'll get back to our main subject, is the genders in German, and it's because it's an inflected language, versus coming to English, where that is virtually non-existent. And I wondered about that. Is it easier to learn English that coming from that, or does that make it more difficult?
No, it's easier to learn English. I also learned French. And the French language has two articles, feminine and masculine. And so, you know, I had to go through learning those because they were not like the same as the German
sure.
ones. You know, you could have, they were different. So you had to learn from scratch. So absolutely. And the two languages are very similar. It's really, yeah, that wasn't a challenge. And then I learned British English. And then sometimes I still probably have a little bit of a British accent because the first years of my life were influenced by my teacher who taught us British English. British.
Right. Well, I understand that. And we in America speak a different language than they do in Britain. I kind of laugh on television. We watch a lot of British television and we use subtitles. I said, oh, we need the subtitles to sometimes catch everything they're saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in Laguna Beach, California, and then I'm going to let Esther kind of lead this, you met one of the pioneers that influenced you in your studies there. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I was lucky. I met two amazing men who went an alternative route in terms of hair. The first one was William Yond, who had developed a hair balancing philosophy and technique based on sacred geometry, basically based on Buckminster Fuller. Maybe some of people in the audience remember Bucky Fuller. And so he just was really into architecture and design, and he thought, you know, how can I cut hair in a way that it creates a strong shape and, you know, it's all connected. And yeah, so he was really the first influence. And then the second one, Anthony Morocco, I met in Laguna Beach, and I learned more like the gardening aspects of hair, like how to brush your hair and what to do when people have hair loss and products. And back then, and then in the 90s, that was when there weren't a lot of chemical-free products out there. Right now we have a much wider selection. And then there is Paul Mitchell. And I never met Paul Mitchell. I just met his mom and his son in Hawaii. And Paul Mitchell was also really into metaphysical and sustainable practices and started an organic enterprise and farm on the Big Island, making his Avapui ginger shampoo, because that's really amazing. There's a plant in Hawaii that grows, and then obviously in some times of the year, parts of the year, I think August, September, you can harvest it, and the juice that comes out of it, the Avapui ginger plant, is just the best shampoo conditioner anybody could ever dream of putting on their hair. It's really something.
So, but on this, from this, like when you left Germany for California, did you know you were heading toward meeting these two people and going?
Well, I had met William already in Germany.
Ah, okay.
And then Anthony was more or less serendipity or law of attraction or synchronicity.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so from William, that's where you learn the principles of the balancing, the hair balancing?
Yes.
And so what was that like? I mean, how were you introduced to it?
Well, when there was a friend who said to me one day, I was still in Hamburg, she said, oh, there's someone in town who does hair balancing. And as I mentioned before, I had done yoga and meditation and worked a lot with dreams and Jungian type of dream analysis. And I also had often in my life glimpses into the future. And so I had a glimpse into my future at one point, and I had seen this hair healer coming over the ocean to Germany a few years before. That friend actually said to me, there's someone in town who does hair balancing, but then immediately I knew that was the one. And then I went to see him, and it was one of those moments where, yeah, you just recognize each other. It was really great. And then I just watched him cut hair, and he was very much open to me and my whole approach of trying to understand hair, the health of it, the psychology of it. He was very supportive of that. And then I wrote my master's thesis interviewing people, what hair means to them. And I also connected hair to fairy tales and to art and just painted a bigger picture. So then I saw him cut people's hair. And then the next time he was in Hamburg, I also made an appointment. And at that point, I hadn't had a haircut in 4 or 5 years. And then to get a haircut that was balanced, it was just really, really amazing. It affected me on many levels, and people also saw it, and I had my eyesight. I mean, an acupuncturist could possibly explain it to you, but I already wore glasses back then, but my eyesight cleared up. There was just a few things that were so profound yeah, that I was sold, basically. And then I translated for him for a few years until he unfortunately died way too early. And then a few of his friends and myself, we put together all we learned from him and continued.
Mm-hmm. So you brought up some really fascinating subjects, how hair relates to fairy tales and mythology and art. So, I mean, the first person who comes to mind, actually, there are several, but Rapunzel and Samson. And so can you talk something about like the symbolism of hair?
Yes.
And how,
yes.
And it that would be so interesting.
It ties in really well with also what Larry wanted to know about, you know, growing up in Germany. I mean, my mother read Grimm's fairy tales to me over and over again. And my favorite fairy tale was Rapunzel. And there was also, that's not known as well, it's called the Virgin Mary's Child, but it has beautiful hair symbolism where she gets basically expelled and, you know, she has to be in the forest and then her clothes fall off her body and then she has just her hair as a coat and, you know, it's very beautiful imagery. And those were my favorite fairy tales. And hair, I found out that hair means pretty much the same to people in different cultures, in different areas of life. It plays a role in relationships, in self-finding, in how do I express myself culturally, politically, artistically, spiritually, religiously, through hair we experience touch, sensuality, sexuality, and that's really everywhere. And everybody would possibly at one point have some memories about that. And then in fairy tales, it's very similar. Hair also represents all of that.
Right. In fairy tales and in art, everybody knows the birth of Venus. Yeah. I mean, you just, you know, that hair moving around. Yeah. I mean, hair features so prominently. You know, I had a friend who wanted me to ask you a question, actually, about hair holding emotional or spiritual trauma, because so many people, you know, when they're experiencing an upheaval, they cut their hair off or, you know, they just... And so that seems very symbolic. Or after a haircut, they'll cry, you know, because it's just, you know.
Yeah. So that, Well, yeah. And then bridging to the arts, the most famous painting by Frida Kahlo, where she had cut her hair and she sits in a suit on a chair and her hair's on the floor. That was after Diego Rivera had left her in...
Oh, self-portrait with cropped hair or something like that, right?
Self-portrait with cropped hair. And that is just representative of what a lot of, especially women, want to do after a separation. They want to cut the hair. And I like to think of it, it's almost like you want to cut the cords, even in the fairy tale Rapunzel, right? Where first the prince climbs up and then, of course... the witch, the mother aspect, also climbs up that ladder and that cord gets cut. So cutting your own hair, deciding to do that, is something that's empowering. For example, when people are diagnosed with cancer and are having chemotherapy and slowly their hair falls out, it's definitely way more empowering to just shave your hair than to every day see how these little hairs, you know, fall off, and it's such a declining feeling. And so I think when a woman feels like she wants to cut her hair after a separation, that she on one hand wants to feel empowered that she is doing the cut, and on another level she will probably re-experience the loss.
You know, because, you know, you mentioned Frida Kahlo and most of her work reflects her inner life, you know, the cropped hair, or she also has like self-portrait with loose hair, but mostly we're used to her doing very traditional braids with ribbons and flowers. But, you know, her self-portraits were so reflective of, intimately reflective of what was going on in her life. You intrigued me when you said relating hair to like the Bauhaus or yeah, so I don't know if you can talk about that a bit.
Although I feel, if I may backtrack, I feel like your friend's question wasn't answered about is there anything in the hair, right?
Yes.
And scientifically, there is really not even our DNA in the shaft of the hair. Now, we have the hair part that's the root that's underneath the scalp. That's where the DNA is. But people sometimes think that also the long hair carries all our genetic information, because sometimes forensic studies reveal that you could trace certain minerals or trace elements or drugs in the hair. But you really, it's really not that. So whenever we feel that there is something in our hair, then it is more a memory that's attached to our hair or energetically. Or we give it that meaning.
Kind of like having a massage, how a massage releases stored memories, maybe.
And I always tell my clients when we do a haircut, you know, when we tune in the beginning, I say, you know, a haircut is a wonderful opportunity to let go of something. That is permanently leaving your system, because we're actually cutting something off. It's the only other time, I mean, with surgery too, but this is of course way less dangerous. And so people symbolically will do that and breathe and just let go of the stresses and just enjoy being pampered and taken care of. And then they feel lighter, because actually a little bit of weight was cut off, but it also marks a new beginning. And in people's biographies, you can look at their different hairstyles and you can see how they document the different phases in their lives.
That's so interesting.
And after a brief pause, we'll return to our guest today on Art in the Air. You're listening to Linda Hollis, and you're listening on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM. We'd like to thank you for listening to Art on the Air. Our show relies on the support of not only our show underwriters, but also our listeners who make donations to this station. Your support of this station will ensure Art on the Air may continue bringing you the best of the arts and culture programming for Northwest Indiana and beyond. If Art on the Air is important to you, please consider supporting this station with a one-time contribution or even making an ongoing sustaining contribution. For information on how to make a contribution, go to this station's website or our show website, breck.com/AOTA. And thank you. And now we'll return to our guest today, Linda Hollis, on Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
So going back to the hair and trauma, So the relief is in the cutting, not the amount, maybe, because can you have the teeniest, tiniest trim and that will give you, you know, that same possible release?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, because when you get a haircut, even if it's just 1 millimeter, very little bit, there's the potential that everything changes. And plus, the person had the experience of being touched, hopefully in a loving, mindful way, by another human being. That alone changes everything. And then, yes, it doesn't have to be a lot of hair.
That feels like pruning.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So there's so many, like, hair is just such a big subject, not only in fairy tales and mythology, which, I mean, we could just continue with fairy tales and mythology before we move on to, like, cultures. If you'd like, you'd mention Samson and Delilah.
Yes, because that's a big one. People come often with the question, well, when you cut my hair, if I get my hair cut, will I lose strength? And it always refers to the story of Samson and Delilah. And I read different translation of that text, the Old Testament. And it never says, interestingly, that Delilah cuts off all his hair. Now, Samson is being depicted as someone who has really tons of hair, huge amounts of hair. Now, theoretically, if someone came and would cut all that hair, it would take a long time and he certainly would wake up. The scriptures actually say that she cut 7 locks only. And that's kind of interesting. And that's now from my first teacher, William. He came up with this theory. The 7 locks could correspond to the 7 chakras. And it could be that she just sort of took the scissors and, you know, randomly cut into his hair, messing with his energy field and power, which I think makes much more sense. So that I tell people, but then I tell them the one important fact. You do not lose necessarily your power when you decide that you want to have your hair cut. But if it is decided for you because you go to prison or way back in Greece, you were a slave. They only shaved half of their hair and the other half they left long. So they were marked and everybody could see those were slaves. If you were a French woman falling in love with a German soldier in France, it could have that the people from the village. There's one big example where the woman was publicly shaved as a punishment for falling in love with a German. So all of that, and if you have cancer and go through chemotherapy again, then it doesn't feel good. But if you or anybody decides, I want to have my hair cut, then it can be empowering. And I don't think you would necessarily lose strength just because you cut your hair. Plus, all the people in the world who have less hair, or all the men who have androgenetic male baldness pattern and who are super strong, you know, physically strong, attractive, mentally strong, it wouldn't make sense. So that's those are my 5 cents in terms of hair and strength.
Well, and I also prompted me to think about when Britney Spears cut off all her hair. And some people suppose it was because of her issues with maybe drugs and things. And so she didn't want, because evidence remains in the hair, the actual hair itself. But that was kind of a transformational moment for her also. She basically had her head shaved. And I don't know, it really was kind of a shock to most people. But that's, the theory is that she did that so there would not be any evidence of her drug use or something.
I'm not sure, because they're obviously, as I said earlier, it's not 100% that the hair will really meticulously record all the drugs that someone has used. But shaving your hair is a profound act. I have done it. I did it in 97 because I felt like I cannot call myself a hair expert if I have never shaved my hair and let go of what is seemingly so important in my life. And I realized it is just hair. And that's really important because, yes, we can have so much fun with it and self-expression, but hair is not necessary for survival. It's for the body, a luxury item. And if we over-identify with it, then it could be potentially devastating if we do lose it as we age, for example.
And of course, coloring your hair, that's an important part of sometimes, like as people get older, they don't want to be gray, you know, and different things like that. They use that. And of course, early on, there seemed a tendency for a lot of women to decide to go blonde because they think that. And that definitely has to influence, you know, how their hair is. I mean, using a whole bunch of products on there to do that, I would imagine. And that's probably not good for them.
Yeah. I mean, again, there is the human need for variety, for self-expression. And for those of us who are privileged enough to be able to buy dyes and color and makeup and all that, it's natural for a lot of people to just want to experiment. That's one thing. To look younger is another thing. And to look blonder also. I mean, there's literally for every single one of them, there's a different motivation and there's cultural pressure or there is conditioning from the society around us. Yeah.
And fairy tales. I mean, fairy tales are blonde light hair was like purity and wealth, and the dark hair were the witches and the, except for Snow White. Snow White might be the exception, but yeah. In a lot of fairy tales, it was like the dark eyes, the dark hair. They were, you know, in the evil sort of category. Yeah,
which is obviously very problematic considering how many people have dark hair on this planet. And what I think is so beautiful is that while we do have blonde, brown, reddish hair, black hair, at the end, we all have the same hair color, white. We're unified. And they say there will be millions and millions of baby boomers, you know, sporting their different shades of white and pewter and silver and platinum and so on. Yeah, so we become all one visually. I think that's really beautiful.
It is. I had a doctor actually that told me if I cut my hair, and I was in my 40s maybe, and she said, oh, don't cut your hair because it will never grow long again. And I, you know, I want to say that that is not true.
No. You know? Yeah. There are so many myths, and those are not the myths from the fairy tales, but there's a lot of conditioning going on, which ultimately has one goal, and that is to sell and push products. I mean, one thing that's concerning to me is, yes, in terms of art, I do understand the need for art and expression. And of course, digitizing images is an art form by itself. But what we see right now in commercials, in magazines, on TV, is no longer real hair. It is all fake hair. It is digitized. There are extensions. It is, the color has been changed. And the problem is that even young little kids think that that is normal hair and that their hair, which has different lengths, different textures, other colors, is somehow flawed. So right. It's a big parallel to the whole body image, especially for women, is how people are subtly made feel that their hair is not okay and not pretty and not healthy, where it really needs psychoeducation, because kids don't understand. I mean, they don't learn that hair grows in different cycles and we do have different lengths. But the digitized images are all, and the Disney characters, it's all one blob of hair. And so hair that's broken up looks broken. And so they buy products to fix that.
Right.
Does your study of hair extend to, facial hair for men and body hair too? Because there's been a whole transformation about, you know, body hair and how, what to keep on that, you know, how that, because obviously men who have beards like me,
yes,
it's grown accustomed to my face. I mean, you know that, but you know, shaving that off, I haven't shaved this off since 1980 or something like that. I've obviously keep a trim though, but I mean,
yeah. If you were an athlete in sports, I mean, like in swimming and various right. sports, they you shave would. Their body hair.
Yeah. Yeah, you would shave it because of the very little resistance. Yeah, but with beards, it's very interesting. There are two options. If a man had a beard for many years, he shaves it off, goes to the office, and no one notices. No one actually saw the beard. They all saw his personality, his eyes. They just didn't even compute. And he's like, oh my God, then I would call this beard was really negative length. It almost didn't exist. But then there are people who have a beard, and they're so, everybody identifies them with having a beard, where little kids will actually cry and think it's not their daddy anymore.
Right.
And says, oh my God, you took your beard off. Then that beard was really part of you and how you projected yourself. That's really fascinating. It really goes both ways. And body hair, again, there is, I like to draw actually a bridge to anthropology. It's a very deep-seated thing, but it's hair is coming out of our body, and for some people, out of nose and hair, and you know, it's in the intimate areas, and it grows. And some cultures thought of it as also being something that the body expels, so it's sort of dirty, like urine or something that comes out of the body or sweat. So there's this deep-seated collective association about hair and dirt that also anthropologists have done a lot of research. And guess what? What do you think makes more money? Keeping your body hair or getting rid of it?
Right. Well, you know the answer to that.
Yeah. It's a billion-dollar industry. And so feeling kind of clean, getting out of the shower, having washed your hair for the second time because, you know, out of the gym, you've used more products, and then, you know, you give yourself a shave or you do your legs, you have this feeling of, oh, my God, I feel fresh, I feel good, you know, and everything, all the stress I have to do in life, that's something I can accomplish. So I believe people over-shampoo and, yeah, and right now definitely taking off their hair.
Yeah. Well, you're listening to our guest today, Linda Holatz, on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
And so don't you think that's kind of, I guess, you know, to use the word trends, because in Europe, you know, a lot of women did not shave. But in America, I mean, from a young age, you know, that's like the ideal, I guess. So, but then that also, you know, that cycles as well. So it really, I mean, I'm thinking about like even hair in like the modern time, like in the 60s, you know, hair was rebellion.
Right. Well, especially women in the south of Europe, they will shave because their body hair is dark. I mean, people with darker hair, but women from Scandinavia, or people who are, you know, blonder, you don't see the hair. So it's a whole different thing, but definitely there's a lot of shaving going on. But yeah, I wanted to mention one more thing, just in case someone's in the audience and has never heard about hair pulling disorder, also called trichotillomania. I actually just submitted my dissertation in psychology. I've done a lot of research on this really dark, you know, shadowy aspect of hair where people have a obsessive compulsive disorder with that. And I just want to say that there is a lot of support out there. And when I grew up, there wasn't. And now with the internet and the global community, so if anybody is affected or knows someone, I'm happy to be a source of networking for them.
And we'll do this at the end of the show, but you tell us like a website, how they could reach out to you.
Yes. But they also can just take my name, Linda Holatz, and then it's .de for Germany. That's where my research on trichotillomania and hair pulling disorder is on. And Hair Garden is just generic, linda@hairgarden.com.
You know, there was a kind of a current program that I watched on that, on hair pulling, like this girl who, you know, was pulling her hair. And it is a compulsive thing. It's like, it's not like I'm in school, I'm not going to do it. It's just like the program that I viewed. Is that the way it is? It's one
yeah,
of the...
it was, I think you were referring to Amy Schumer's, it was kind of a 6-part series. No, but yeah, she did. Okay. Then I don't know, but yeah. So what was again your question? Exactly.
It's not controllable, really. It's not like you can say, I'm in school and I'm just not going to pull my hair when I'm in school.
It depends on the individual person. And some people will not do it when other people are around, but then they have to do it when they're alone. And yes, it's not a bad habit. It is an urge that is very, very hard to stop. It's not a bad habit. It is really more than that.
What did your thesis focus on?
I actually chose the theme of hair care and hair pulling disorder. And I brought together 43 women with hair pulling disorder for a mindfulness-based hair appointment with a bunch of hair professionals, 29 of them, who administered this hair appointment. And we measured before and after through diaries and entries and some scales, some psychological scales. And the beautiful thing was that after the one-time intervention of maybe around 90 minutes, the hair pulling, the symptomatic behavior decreased. And whereas I was thinking, oh, it's probably because people feel, like we said earlier, lighter and better and the hair feels healthier, the biggest impact was caused by the empathy and the understanding of the hair professionals, that the people with hair pulling disorder felt seen and understood and treated like normal human beings, and not, because it is shocking, you know, when you see someone who has an irregular baldness pattern on their hair, and they might not even tell you that it's due to their own pulling, they say it's some form of a hair loss. So once they admit it, people are just at loss. Why would you do that? Nail biting, everybody understands nail biting. Well, you're nervous, you bite your nails. But with hair pulling, it's harder somehow for people to feel empathic and compassionate. But that was exactly what made a big difference. And that was one of my studies. And then in another one, I just basically found out about hair care and what people can do with hair pulling disorder.
Did any of it include, like, is there like homeopathy or acupuncture or?
No, that would have been another intervention that would have to be, you know, tested. And
sure.
No, I did one intervention.
Well, I'm just going to say two words, Bob Ross, art and hair.
Yeah.
But I think we have a little bit of time left to talk about hair in ancient cultures, like how in Egypt the wig was the way to go. You know, that was the status. It was the status and the divinity. So can you touch on other possible cultures in hair?
Yeah. I mean, there are cultures. I mean, the wigs also in Europe, in Egypt, it had a lot to do with hygiene as well. Mm-hmm. Because a wig was easily controlled, but people had to deal with lice, you know, and with other things way more than we have to right now. I mean, still a problem, but so other cultures are, I mean, there are the ones who never cut their hair. I mean, like the Sikhs, for example, and a lot of indigenous people don't cut their hair. The Rastafarians, you know, for religious reasons. And I believe there is a power in uncut hair when you just let hair grow wild and do not interfere with it. And personally, I do not like to cut very little kids' hair because it's still so fine and curly, and then put like a sharp scissors next to it. You know, I can understand how you just want to let this part of us grow. So I believe there's a power in uncut hair. And then the other extreme is, you know, like the Buddhist monks shave their hair, which is also a form of balancing their hair, of just not being distracted by it.
And sometimes, like, I think in the Hindu religion, the first haircut is the spiritual cleansing. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm not sure what age that first haircut comes at, you know, there might be.
Well, I know that a lot of people from, I mean, India, who I've talked to, is that first haircut, and girls and boys will get their hair shaved at a certain point, you know, 5-6 years old. And that's actually when the baby hair, you know, naturally falls out and is replaced by stronger hair. But they basically give it, you know, a ceremony in hopes of growing stronger hair, which, you know, with the incredible genetic makeup of Indian people, happens. I mean, it's just very strong hair.
So when do you find out about the your dissertation? You have to probably do a defense at some point. When do you project that be completed?
Yeah, the defense is in the middle of June, and the defense is basically I just present 30 minutes, and then with like 3 or 4 professors of my, you know, department where I am, we talk about it and discuss it and see where it goes. Yeah, I think that's going to be the easy part. I think I'm through the hard part.
Well, that's true. Well, we only have about a minute left, or a little bit more. We want to give you a chance to share how people can reach out to you, your website, any contact information, and maybe anything. I don't know if, obviously, you're in Germany, so you probably have events, but I don't know if that would affect people here. But just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I am, you know, dual citizen, and my daughter lives in California, and I'm just here in Germany for a while. So I'm in the States twice a year at least. I think the easiest website for people to remember is hairgarden.com, but they also can just take my name, Linda Hollatz, and then it's .de for Germany. That's where my research on trichotillomania and hair pulling disorder is on. And Hair Garden is just generic. Linda at hairgarden.com is easy, and then people can just have a... maybe remember it that way. And yeah, no, I'm also here. I'm in California most of the time when I'm in the U.S., but sometimes I'm also in other states.
Sounds
good. Is there a resource if people want their hair balanced? Is there like a resource for the states?
Not really. They could write to me an email and I could see if I could find someone. There are not that many people in the states doing it.
Well, we appreciate coming on Art of the Air and sharing your hair-raising journey, you might say. And on our website, in your picture, there'll be a link to hairgarden.com. Our guest today was Linda Hollatz, and you can find out more about her at that website. Appreciate you sharing your arts journey and everything and break a leg on your wonderful dissertation. I know how that is to defend that, going through it myself. Whoa, Linda, thank you so awesome. Much.
Thank you, Larry, and thank you, Esther.
Thank you, Linda.
We'd like to thank our guest this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Dee Dotson, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Media, and to Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Ember Forge Consulting, Thoughtful Marketing and Digital Learning, built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at AOTA@breck.com. That's AOTA@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air. Show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express